Hello and welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. This is the 38th time I've done this, and I still have to read off the script. So we're off to a killer start. This episode is entitled Any Alternative, and it's about a great collection of songs called 33/34. Is that how you pronounce it? We should have figured that out before we started doing this. Is that what you call the tape?
Yeah, that works. You can call it whatever you want, man.
Well, it's got a label though. There's a 3 and a 3, a slash and a 3 and a 4. 33/34, is that what we're...
You can say that. You can say 33/34. You can say double 3/34. You can say 33rd, 34th. You know, it's really, you know, I'm not any authority.
Well, you made it. You made it. So it's this great collection of songs called Something with Numbers by a man named Greg Murray. And our guest for this episode is someone who knows something about, let's just call it 33/34, Mr. Greg Murray. Hello. Welcome. Introduce yourself, sir.
What's up, Matt? Thank you for having me on this podcast. Very happy to be here. Had some pizza. Had some beer. I'm feeling real good.
We're in comfy faux leather chairs.
Faux leather is the only leather I'll do.
Yeah, here we are.
Love it.
Faux leather office chairs in a room that's lit like an opium den
I demanded it.
You demanded the opium den lighting, so here we are. You made this tape, right? So let's talk to me about this album and what it is, or explain to the folks who are listening in their earbuds, driving around, stuck in traffic, whatever you might be doing, about what 33/34 is.
Well, I recorded some songs with my buddy Mikey C. And we recorded them, I think, last summer and last fall and last winter, 2015, just different days here and there with My War Matt. And I just had these songs that I wanted to play and wanted to record. Mikey was kind enough to play drums with me and play a little guitar and a little bass too. And, you know, now we have this artifact, and I think that's cool.
Yes, it is. And let's see, so to describe it, our mutual friend Damon from Silence refers to it as, you know, sort of like this Elvis Costello-esque collection of songs. It came out, I guess, primarily on cassette?
Yeah, you can download it too, but if you want to own it, you got to buy a cassette.
You got to buy a cassette. Well, you can pay for the download, but if you want a tangible item like what I have in my hands right here.
You can too, but an MP3 won't keep you warm at night.
MP3 will not keep you warm at night. And so I guess what I want to talk about in terms of the album, I mean, and this is pure, true DIY. This is your thing, right? You just did it.
Yeah.
And what does it mean to... And almost so, I know our mutual friend Damon played bass, right, for the release show?
Yeah.
But there's not like a Greg Murray band, right?
No, there's not. Just we.
Yeah, and so I was thinking about it as one of the fascinating things about this is, you know, there's that idea of closet drama. You know, the drama that is made to be read but not performed. You know, in a weird way, is this like a closet punk rock record? You know, it's the recorded artifact that if you didn't see it that one time, you don't see it. And what does it mean to, like, make something like that that you're not going to, like, tour in a big, ugly white van and eat, you know, raw beans? to do, you know, as kind of a thing. Like, what does it mean to still, like what you said, you know, these songs should be recorded and should exist, even if it's not going to have all the auspices of, dude, this is a band, man, and we're going to gig it out. You know, what does that mean to do closet punk?
I've
coined a phrase.
I appreciate that you have imputed so much sort of awareness into what I was doing, much more so than I had when I was doing it.
Okay, so what was your process and thing about doing this in terms of...
I just wanted to record some songs. And if, I don't know, if there are people out there that want to play these songs with me, that's cool too. I'll play them with you.
Yeah.
I mean, but I've never like been on, you know, I've played in bands on and off since I was in high school. I've never been on like tour with anything that I've played in.
Mm-hmm.
But I like writing songs and playing music, so I just wanted to do more of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mikey and I might play a little bit more, but that's to be seen.
To be seen.
You know, just you got the noise inside of you. It's got to come out.
Yeah, and so I think that's a really important lesson, because you are by day
a very handsome man.
Yes.
Yes.
This is true.
Is there anything else?
Well, you are a professional.
Yeah, I'm a lawyer.
You have one of those all-consuming professions, right? It is a, you know, it is a thing. It is a very particular Keebler tree. This is not my first conversation today with a lawyer. It is actually my third.
Oh,
not that I'm in trouble.
No.
But I went to an information academic union meeting, and the legal team for the Academic Workers Association was there. And, you know, a couple people knew me, somebody didn't. I introduced myself, and so we were talking. And one of the members of the legal team there was an ABD graduate student, then became all but dissertation.
Oh, okay.
So he did the coursework, comprehensives, was going to write the dissertation, and said, you know, I'd rather be a labor lawyer.
Hey.
And so he is, and so he's like, I chose one highly specialized, very refined thing, niche thing, for another highly specialized niche thing.
Right,
and what was I thinking?
Must be you know, a personality trait or something like that.
Yeah, it is a personality trait of, you know, a certain mindset and a certain, then it almost leads to maybe a certain lifestyle, worldview. But so you have this, like, established other thing that, you know, is probably consumes most weekdays, right?
Yeah, I do go to work most weekdays. Don't take too many off.
Yeah.
But I, you know, so I don't know. I like to think that we do good work.
Absolutely.
And we do good work. That I work with really good people, and we help people, and I'm very thankful to be able to do that. I don't think all lawyers do that. I think a lot of other lawyers spend a lot more time out of their lives doing things that don't help people.
Yeah, yeah, as we were talking about dealing with actually a union-busting attorney, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sort of thing. But so it's like you have this thing that exists, but, and I think it's what I find fascinating about your story then in this particular album is that, yeah, you had these songs and they have a worth. The work has a worth, that it has to be born in some way, and that you would rather do it. Because I know, and the reason I'm saying that is I know a lot of other people who have that creative engine inside of them that, because they get into a profession or they do a thing that is, you know, very oftentimes consuming of their lives. And I think, you know, a lot of the lawyers I know, law is very consuming of their life.
Yeah.
That you still made time for these songs. And is writing these songs and making this tape almost a weird kind of stewardship. Like, you made a thing that's real, and now it exists. And there is a worth to that work.
I think so.
No matter what.
Right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, any, you know, like, you don't... I think this is something that Elliot Smith said, if I'm recalling an interview that I saw, but, like, you don't make art because it's going to do anything for you. You know, it's not going to feed you, or it's not going to keep you warm. You just do it because it's something nice to do, and it's worth doing for its own sake.
Yeah,
and I think that's why any, like, of these freaks that I'm sure you've talked to in here, you know, do their thing. They just do it because they feel compelled to do it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I will say, there's some folks that I've had, and I know, and that I've talked to, and I've had on this podcast that have the big dreams. or they do have that we're turning this into a living, or we're putting everything on hold, you know, and going on tour for a month, or all of that, you know. And what I like is I know all these creative people who maybe that's not where they are in their lives, who maybe then kind of, as I've gotten older and I still write and stuff, who just let that kind of get turned off. Just turn that engine off and not thinking about maybe talent, maybe even individual talent to be able to write and perform songs and record them. Once you have that, is that a kind of stewardship? That, like, you're responsible for this now. You know what I mean? Like, once you put something out in the world, are you then, you know, it's adopting a kitten. You know what I mean? As we were talking earlier before the podcast started, I have this problem cat that sometimes gets stressed out and likes to, like, pee on my clothes and my bed and all of that. And we found a way to manage the kitten, but I'm not going to get rid of the kitten. I'm not going to get rid of the cat. I love the cat. That's as much of a pain in the ass and a total asshole that creature is, that cat has a home with me until the end of its life.
Is it 100% pro-cat podcast?
Yes, this is a pro-cat. I will say, though, this is probably the only cat I'm going to own. What? I could say in my life I own one cat.
All right.
And this cat's still here. When that cat is done, I think I filled my quota. My lifetime cat ownership quota.
I have two cats. Before I had these cats, I didn't realize that my heart had the capacity for so much love. Mm. And I'm sure I'll be saying the same thing once I get a third.
I see. You should check out a former podcast guest, Sarah Donner.
Oh, yeah? Does she have a lot of cats?
She does fostering and adoption and stuff like that. Cat rescue. She does cat rescue.
Okay.
And then she has an entire album about songs about cats and has her own, like, cat video podcast and stuff.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and actually adopted this poor kitty that was found tied to a bush and almost died and was going to die, and has, like, brought this cat back to life, basically.
Oh, well, that's great.
I mean, it had birth defects and was born without eyelids and all of this crazy stuff.
Oh, my.
Respiratory infection that it had when she adopted it damaged its lungs. And kitty's named Melon. Melon's cool. Melon's still with us.
Still kicking.
Still kicking. Still chasing that ball of yarn.
Still chugling.
But no, I mean, you made these songs without delusions of grandeur, which I think is just so fascinating to me. It's like, again, that you do it still. I know so many people. I'm 38 years old now. I have so many creative contemporaries, or I would say had creative contemporaries, who just let the spark turn off.
Well, you know, I mean,
and so I think it's a really just cool thing that you made a tape. Yep. You made a tape with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 good songs on it.
7 songs. More than an EP, but not quite enough for a full length.
That's fine.
You know, I don't know. I guess people, you know, grow up and their priorities change, and there's nothing wrong with that. If that's how you you want your life to go, it's your life.
Yeah.
You can do whatever you want with it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just like playing guitar music.
You like playing guitar music. I guess for me, it's like we're sitting in a room full of books that's in a house full of books, records, CDs, and DVDs that I like. I think that once you make a text or an object or a thing, that it immediately has an intrinsic worth.
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
You know, and that's cool. And I think even if you have the ability to do something and be creative, I think that has an intrinsic worth. And so it just bums me out when people are like, yeah, I used to, you know, do stuff, but that's over.
It does kind of feel like a bummer, you know, right?
Yeah, it does. It does. So I think it's really cool that, you know, for folks who, you know, to encourage folks, if you want to make a 7-song cassette tape, can, like, totally make a 7-song cassette tape.
Yeah, you know.
And then you made a thing. And that's worth it for no other reason than you made a thing and now it's in the world.
Yeah, like, that's how playing music always was for me. I just played in, you know, I played in punk bands when I was in high school. I played in punk bands when I was, you know, in college. I started wearing shirts with collars recently, but I think there's still a little bit of punk going on the tape.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But, you know, I never expected anything to come of any of the music that I've ever made, and nothing ever has.
No.
But it's just fun to do, you know? It's just fun. Yeah. That's all it is. And I don't know. I think it's meaningful to me to go out and do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think one of the things I find interesting about the songs is, and why I wanted to call this podcast Any Alternative, which is the first song of the seventh, song number one.
Boom
of the tape, or I guess Bandcamp download. I'll have the link on the website when I post this. Is I love also about how these songs, a lot of these songs are about frustration, but there's a joy and an energy in the music. And I want to talk about that juxtaposition as you're like sort of writing these songs that you find, even, you know, because also, hey, all art in some way is a celebration of some aspect of the human experience. Even a horror movie is a kind of a celebration of, you know, it's like, you know, the medievals, they had a festival for everything, you know, or there's some of them did, you know, and certainly the medieval Catholic liturgical calendar is a patron saint for everything. And you say, it's good that somebody's doing this. It's good that that exists. you know, in a way that this, are these songs a celebration of frustration? And how does that, I mean, because it gives, I mean, these are energetic, punky, propulsive songs that are fun to listen to.
I mean, I guess they're just, like, those are the things that I feel like, you know, writing about, you know. I think the writing, like, lyrics is the hardest part of writing a song.
Mm.
Like, if you get a riff, you know, you can sit and, you know, sit on your bed and play that for hours over and over again until it feels really good, and then you add another little riff to it, and then you only need another part that's about 15 seconds long as a bridge, and you have a song.
Yeah.
And you just play those things like two or three times each, and you're good to go. But I think it's a lot harder to be able to like say something on top of that that you don't find, you know, embarrassing, or that you don't find, you know, that you're not bashful about saying something, that you're confident expressing to other people, and you know, a lot of the songs are like, you know, sort of just, you know, sad, sappy love songs. But that's, you know.
But they rock.
Well,
they're not dirges.
Well, thank.
They're not dirges.
I mean, I think it's poppy because I like poppy music.
Yeah.
But, you know, the kind of songs that I've always thought were the most, you know, significant for me were, you know, like, you know, sort of sad, sappy, you know, love songs and songs about alienation and feeling like a weirdo. I also like really like political songs, but I don't really feel compelled to write political songs. I read the news and listen to the news, you know, like every goddamn day, so And I feel like, you know, anyone can go to a lot of really great sources for information about what's going on in the world. They don't need to come to, you know, my Bandcamp page for me to tell them, you know, why they should or should not vote for this person. So what am I going to tell them in the alternative? I'm going to tell them about, you know, my inner world, right?
Yeah. Well, I think that's true, and I think there's also something you said, because I do the podcast, and I think I write, and I do photography, and I'm kind of working on a noise project myself, actually. So this is like you're like my artistic bigger brother. It's like, yes, I can make a tape. Actually, I have a tape duplicator now. I own a tape duplicator right over there across the room, and so I can now really make tapes.
Ready to start up the presses, you know?
Yes, exactly. And I always found that there are certain things that I can express certain ways. you know, there's certain things that belong as poems. There's certain things that belong as prose pieces. There's certain things I can do with a camera.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain things that I can do in my academic writing is all sort of inherently political.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that gets that out. And so I can do that and then write apolitical poetry. Sort of, sometimes. There's a couple poems that get political, but it's like weird. Like, I had this... But it's just like my mind works to express this idea in this form and this idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so is, right. I guess, is that the case for like the, just the way these songs sound and the way these songs work? It's, you know, energetic expression of, yeah, alienation or disappointment or frustration that, you know, I guess is this why also sometimes people are in multiple bands?
Right, well...
Because you were also in bands too, and is there just like a even like a different paradigm that maybe you think in when you wrote for those bands as opposed to writing this tape?
No, there's not. You know, I've played in different bands, and so, you know, you'll have a style for one band and a style for another band. You can tell where mm-hmm. you know a song that you come up with might fit better over here or over there.
Yeah.
You know, that's...
Yeah, yeah, which I think is, yeah, is a way of sort of thinking about, and also you think with that, it's, you know, who you're playing with, right?
Right.
Or as opposed to, you're Greg Murray.
Right, yeah, this is...
You're all, the one and only Greg Murray.
This is all me, baby.
Yeah, only you, baby. Actually, there is, I will say on Bandcamp, there is a Greg Murray in Ireland, but different Greg Murray.
Right.
Because I was looking today to make sure I was, like... putting notes down and preparing for this, and I went to that page and I saw two releases that was like, no, you put out more stuff. What, I gotta listen to all this other stuff too now, man. He's gonna be here at 7 and I gotta go to this meeting. What am I gonna do? And then I realized, oh, Ireland,
right. I didn't know that. That's cool. We're making a name for ourselves.
Yes, well, he actually, I guess maybe because of you, he uses his middle name.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Damn. I'm going to be Greg Murray, U.S.
Greg Murray, U.S.
Greg Murray. No, I'm going to be Greg... I don't know. I'm going to work some umlauts into my name. That's what I'm going to do.
Greg Murray.
Yeah, yeah.
Murray. Yes. But yeah, I mean, so is that part of the thing? And then I guess, too, is also if you're writing for yourself, like, thinking about... Because all the songs really do fit together. Like, 3334 has... an aesthetic to it. You know what I mean? Like, they all fit together. And it's not like they're the same song 7 times, but there is a pronounced sound and joie de vivre, if you will, for this collection of songs.
Well, I mean...
That makes it like it fits, it dovetails together nicely. Excuse me. The 7 songs do.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's probably just a result of, you know, me writing most of these songs. I mean, Mikey, you know, there's definitely one of the songs on the tape that Mikey and I wrote really collaboratively. We wrote it together. And Mikey did, you know, come up with some other parts and help out with some of the arrangement for some of the other songs. But, I don't know, they're just all songs that, you know, I had and that I like. And I thought this would be a nice vehicle for putting them out and letting people listen to them. And, you know, now they exist in the world and I can forget about them for a little bit.
Well, not quite yet. So actually, maybe the thing that we can do here is if we could, you know, kind of pause our conversation for a second.
Yes, yes, sure.
And play one of the songs for the good folks. We could talk about maybe what we're talking about. You know, they can hear it. And then maybe we'll hear it. You folks, listen to home. We'll hear this song and then we'll talk about the song. How about that? Can we do that?
That sounds like a plan. Thank you.
That's the thing. I'm going to press pause in a second right now.
Single sleepless night, I lie awake and wonder.
And so that was...
The Riverside.
The Riverside. So that was song 5 out of 7.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so... which I think is... Yeah, it's very indicative of the whole thing again. And I think everything kind of dovetails.
You would call it the middle of the tape.
Yes. Only it's 5 out of 7.
Well, so let's call it the back middle.
It was song 3 and a half. The third and a half song. So the second half of Going Nowhere is the middle of the tape.
Oof.
Just saying.
You know, now I got a whole new perspective on the situation.
It's
like where everything just goes in, like the contrast shifts, you know?
Yeah, I know. And you think about if you think about album sequencing like baseball, you put your best hitter in the number 3 spot.
Ooh.
And here we are in the number 5. That's an unbalanced lineup.
I'm not saying it's
baseball, but I'm just saying I often think in that paradigm. The best thing should be the third thing. I'm just saying, in all things, as how I eat and dress and everything, third thing.
Father, Son, Holy Spirit.
You know? There you go. There right. you go.
Mm-hmm.
no, but so talk to us about this song, what it's about or what it expresses for you.
Oh, this song was, I think, this song was the first one of the bunch of songs that I finished. And I finished it years ago.
Mm.
And, it's just a sad, you know, sad, sappy love song. You know, I don't know if I have a unique perspective, but I just have it's an experience a lot of people have.
Yeah.
But I think that those are important experiences, you know,
mm-hmm.
significant. But I don't know. I like that one. I like that one a lot.
Yeah, I think that one works. So if you're saying that's the first one that got done, so that was that the one that was sort of like, oh, well, I don't say it legitimizes it, but it makes it... Is it the keystone for the whole record then? Is that maybe what it is? Not the middle of the record, but is it the keystone? You say, oh, well, these are the kind of songs I can make because I made this one and it's good and I can make...
I think
things because this thing exists or whatever, it gives you license to make the rest of the album. Did it give you license to make the rest of the tape?
I mean, I guess in a way, that's an interesting thing to say. You know, I got it done and I had a couple others kicking around that were half finished or songs that sort of had music but no words. And I thought, well, hey, you know, I got one down, one in the can.
Yeah.
If I get a couple more down, maybe I can record them and let some people hear them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I guess it did kick things off in that way.
Yeah. And I know this happened to other people. I know this is happening to me actually right now, where I, about a year ago, I wrote a poem and it worked. Like, it was just like, oh, well, this is the kind of poetry I've been trying to write for 20 years. And I finally wrote that. It almost sort of gave me license to do other things. And now I'm working on putting a collection together.
Yeah,
to put out into the world. And it was sort of like, well, once I achieved this one, oh, well, that, you know.
The first step.
I have all these other things that will be part of it. But for me, it was almost like weird, like this poem legitimized the rest. And I wondered if Riverside kind of worked to like sort of legitimize the idea of making a tape. Again, in a lot of ways, hey, this is a self-help podcast. This is for other people who... You know, should make punky 7-song EPs or finally write that screenplay or whatever, you know, that they stop doing to just do it, damn it. And is that a way into kind of unlocking the key in terms of like you made this song to unlock the key to maybe another collection of songs, this collection of songs?
Yeah, yeah, you all can do it. You have the power within you.
Yes.
There's no authority but yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. Like, now that I made this tape with the help of some friends, and it's done.
It's done, it exists, it's real.
And now...
Look at me playing with the case.
If I want to make another tape, I have to start the process all over again. Which is, it's a lot to start.
Yeah.
Over a project again, you know, you have to get moving, get momentum, but it's fun.
Yeah,
it's cool.
Yeah, and you made it like a real thing. And I guess, and you did this sort of like just total DIY, right? This is totally independent, totally, like in terms of even like manufacturing the tapes, right? I mean, how did you make tape?
I sent the tapes up to a company that duplicated them. They put them in these nice cases.
Oh, so look at that.
I didn't duplicate them myself. I don't own a tape duplicator. Mm. But I did, you know, a good friend of mine, Leanne, she did the cover art. She did the lyric sheet. She did the insert.
It looks really nice. I mean, it's... The way the album is sort of simple and functional and complete, the packaging is simple, functional, complete, and aesthetically united. Yeah,
Looks great.
It does. It really does.
I love the way that it came out. But I put it all together myself. I cut everything out myself. I stamped all the tapes with this little stamp that I had made. So yeah, definitely I did it all myself, that's for sure.
Well, that's good. And again, I think that is a great, you know,
other than,
do it, make it, be it.
Other than, Mikey played with me, which was great. I played drums, he played guitar on a couple songs, he played bass on a song. You know, Matt recorded everything. Matt, Mikey, and Damon all played with me when we played these songs out for the first and only time a couple months ago, and I was, you know, very thankful to all of them for helping me do all this.
Absolutely. It takes a village to make an independent... No.
It does.
It does, though. And it's nice to have contemporaries and all of that.
Yeah.
And so, let's see here. What else do I want to talk about? Or what is there anything you want to talk about in terms of thinking about this collection, I guess? That's the question. Or the tape, or the making of it, or advice for people who want to do it, or all of that.
I don't really have any advice or insight. It was just a fun thing to do. You probably had a lot more sophisticated people in here that have done much bigger projects, that have taken a lot more, you know, time and capital and effort. But
yes and no. I mean, I think it's, you know, part of the thing, and actually we were talking about this before we were listening to the song, because, you know, even though I'm doing this as a drop-in, I'm cheesy like this, folks, and need to hear the song so we can keep talking about it. In a weird way, even, you know, as I was saying with the tape, you know, as the best vehicle to express certain ideas and the songs that you wrote. It's almost like, you know, the thing with the podcast that I like to do is to get people to almost sort of think critically about their own experience. Mm. And maybe is it their promotion, you know, there'll be a Bandcamp link, and how could somebody actually even buy this tape if they wanted to?
They could
buy the actual physical thing.
If someone wanted to buy this, you could either be my friend.
Yes, that's option one.
And ask me to buy the tape, and I'll give you one, and we'll have a good time, and we'll talk about being good friends with each other,
mm-hmm.
and it'll be very fulfilling for all of us. I would hope.
However, for random strangers who might be listening to the podcast, who are probably my friends, I think.
Oh well,
then I do have some random strangers that listen to this. Hi, random strangers. Hey, hope you're doing well.
For you, you would need to send $5 to Happy Dude at 742 Evergreen Terrace, Springfield. You have the power. Or you can, you can email the Bandcamp page and I'll hook you up.
Cool. But yeah, so it's like, you know, people do things at varying degrees, varying levels. I mean, sometimes it's just weird hobbies that people have, or whatever, interesting hobbies, that this thing that they like to do. And I offer, you know, cynical self-promotion, the narcissistic pleasure of being interviewed, which it is a narcissistic pleasure.
Isn't it?
It's great. I should get a couch, actually, for in here to do this. I should have one of those, like, psychiatrist chaise lounges.
right.
Stare at the ceiling and muse while... But also, it is a way for people... I wanted people to think critically about what they're doing. And also for me, it's like I only do things that I like on this podcast.
Oh, well, thank you for saying
that. You're welcome. And it's true, because I wouldn't want to waste my time. Like, oh, yeah, really? So what did you think about that? So what are your influences? Yeah? Yeah, that song's pretty cool. You know, I mean, it's just... I'd have about as much fun making it as the random strangers who listen to this would have. Hi, random strangers. Would have maybe listening to it themselves. But it is also, for me, it's like if I have to find something that I want to talk about, or I find aesthetically compelling, you know, which again for this is the, you know, joy and the sort of energetic joy and sort of frustration and celebrating those feelings in a way that is, you know, the other thing I was thinking about was, you know, like I was thinking about the documentary about They Might Be Giants, Gigantic. Or talking about like songs like They'll Need a Crane or whatever, that if you just read those lyrics, you would think they're a dirge. But they write this incredibly happy music, and that's such an interesting for me even the Smiths. I mean, Johnny Marr's guitar doing the not obvious thing with some of those songs and some of those ideas that are being put across.
Right.
There is just such an incredible joyousness to that band.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I love that about the Smiths. You know, Johnny Marr is like the coolest guitar player.
Yeah,
and Morrissey's like the coolest dude.
Yeah,
I'm a big unapologetic fan of Morrissey.
I'm with you.
Like everything that he touches turns to gold.
Yes,
as far as I'm concerned.
Yes,
but I don't think that you know, I don't want to put myself in a box, but I'd have trouble writing like a rock and roll guitar song that isn't like poppy.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of music I like.
Yeah.
But I don't have any interest in like, you know, I don't know, singing about candy canes and like sunshine or anything like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't find that to be particularly compelling, at least, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, I think that's what is compelling, and I was like, I want to explore this with this person. And it's weird, as, you know, we know each other a bit. But I've had like old friends on, and it's weird how even that's a completely different kind of conversation.
How so? You know, how's that different?
Well, you think there is a structure to this? There is a structure and a genre and an idea and a premise. And how often do you have conversations within a premise?
Right.
You know, I mean, it's... That's a long, boring car trip, I think, before you resort to premise.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, or the top five list or whatever. What's the best? What are some things where this happened and not other things? You know, whatever. You know, I get into those conversations, and to have a premise is interesting. But for this, there is a thing. And there is that weird, like, oh, you made a thing. We're on a podcast.
Yeah.
We are on a podcast, and that is so real. You know, and it's like, no. We're sitting here, and there's a microphone hooked up to a computer.
Live to the entire world.
Live to the entire world, yes.
As it were, you might say.
Yes.
You could say that. You could say a lot of things.
You could say a lot of things, but actually, we are in your iPod or on your phone right now. Having this conversation again, it's like the sort of multiple dimension thing. This is episode 38. I exist in 39 multiple dimensions. There's my real life, and then there's the me that is constantly repeating this conversation every time someone listens to it.
Right. And the question you have to ask yourself is, if you had to repeat this conversation infinite times over, exactly the same as we had it right now...
Which sounds like hell.
Oh, see, that's it. I wouldn't change a thing. I'd be happy with it.
I would be, but you think there would be no other possibilities.
Well,
this podcast is it.
We're
going to listen to that one song, The Riverside.
But that's the moral of the story, right? You know, if you can say that the thing that you are doing would make you happy if it were to repeat infinite times over, in the exact same way that it had already occurred to you that you wouldn't change a thing, well, then you've...
Well, that's great.
You've achieved it.
And we have achieved it, but then also I like eating cheese.
Well...
There's no cheese in this room.
You know, we could expand it out to, encompass a full, well-lived life. You know?
But it would have to be in this room because the cord on this thing is pretty long. But it really, it's not that portable, and I use my desktop because I still have a desktop. I have a desktop and two landline phones that I unplug so we could record this podcast because I am hip and with it and contemporary.
Right. Well, you know, cables and coils are real cool stuff. You know, power lines. Yeah.
I always love just looking at effects pedals.
Magnets, how do they work?
How do they work?
How do they work?
And, you know, you can't listen to scientists because they'd be all lying and shit, you know? So, you know, the Gathering of the Juggalos is over my birthday this year, and that's only a few hours away.
Oh, so...
No, I'm not going, but I love that. You know what? That's one of the things I do love. Speaking of, I don't know, maybe is it, you know, the intrinsic worth of things, the intrinsic worth of ritual, too. Every year when the Juggalo infomercial comes out on YouTube, the like 20 to 30 minute infomercial they make, that is one of the highlights of my year. It's not late spring without going, oh shit, this is on YouTube, they made a new one, and just loving the death. I don't know if I could ever go to that space. Like, the actual Gathering of the Juggalo, I'd probably just be so horrified and terrified and, like, I'm going into my car now. Or whatever, I don't know what would happen. But, or I would just, like, fall into a pit of cynical irony. I don't know. But I love watching that YouTube video. And it's like, it's not spring if that doesn't happen.
Oh, yeah, we all mark the seasons differently.
And for me, Gathering of the Juggalos YouTube infomercial is a vital part of late spring.
You know, I wonder if the pool's open today. That's an important milestone for me. If there were an open pool right now, I wouldn't be here.
Ah, I'm sure they're out there. Well, I think on that happy note, speaking of rituals, I think it's time for the bottom five.
Uh-oh.
The bottom five is a series of questions not related to our main topic that are of a surrealistic and or philosophical nature. Are you ready, Mr. Greg Murray, Esquire?
You know, Matt, I am ready.
You are ready?
It's been a pleasure, you know, talking about the tape with you, but I'm ready for, I'm ready to take our conversation to strange new places.
Yes, exactly. Hey, question one, folks who've listened to the podcast before, know this question well. So reincarnation is, I have to ask this of everyone who's ever on this.
All right.
So if you're ever on this again, because you made another tape or something, you won't get this question again, because I keep the scripts and the files, and I actually, when I have repeat guests, I look and see, oh God, I can't ask that question quite, or a couple times I still screw that up. But anyway, if reincarnation is real, and you had to come back as an infectious disease or illness, what kind of disease or illness would you be?
Oh, man. I think the kissing disease, just for all the action.
Ah, like some, like mono?
Yeah, yeah.
You would totally be mono.
Mononucleosis.
Yeah. Well, you know, anything mono is still a recording term. It's still into music.
Oh, so full circle.
Full circle. Yeah, I like it. Mono.
Back to mono.
Mono.
In the words of Phil Spector.
Yes. Yes.
Didn't think we'd go there, but we did.
Oh.
Now we're backing off.
Yes, now we're backing off. So question two. What is the strangest injury you have ever suffered? Strangest way you've ever been hurt? The most random, like, was it Final Destination 6-esque kind of accident or something?
I lead a pretty cautious life, but once I had dropped something at my apartment and I bent down to pick it up and I hit my head on a bar stool that I had at my apartment. We had a breakfast bar that there were these bar stools that had these sort of aluminum backs to them with these sharp edges on them. I hit my I hit my head on it and got a gash over my right eyebrow, and I still have a scar. Went to the hospital. They asked me what I was there for. I told them I had a face problem. And the doctor, the ER doctor, didn't believe that I had not been drinking that night.
Oh, jeez.
When I told him that I dropped something on the floor and needed to bend down and pick it up and had inadvertently hit my head on the back of a chair. He was being like, all right.
See, that's funny you should say that. I have a friend and colleague who said that her husband, they were drinking wine, and they somehow the wine glass knocked over and broke, and the wine glass, like, cut his wrist. So if you want to talk about doctors not believing the explanation, go to the hospital with a cut wrist.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So I can see this. So yes, you were not... Okay, you were not drinking. Okay. You can tell me, but okay.
One time when I was much younger, when I was like six, a big wooden coat, like suit hanger, fell on my head. But I don't know. I haven't been hurt all that much. I don't think so.
That's good for you. You know, that I'm not alone in the world. I remember one time doing like a screening with my primary care physician, and he went over through the, you know, have you done this? Has this happened? Has this happened? Has this happened? And we got to, have you ever broken a bone? And I said, no. And he's like, really? Like, he, like, said it in his tone, like, wow, you missed out on part of the human experience.
Yeah, something, man, I've never broken a bone either.
Yeah, see, I got shit for it. I was, like, shamed. It was almost like when I tell people I don't like Star Wars.
Oh.
They're like, you don't like Star Wars?
Oh.
What?
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 What? That's what it was. And I was like, dude, I just never broke a bone, okay? All right, question three.
Broke a lot of hearts, but never a bone.
Ah, not even that. If only in my case. All right. Actually, it's not. This isn't even a question. This is a prompt.
A prompt. Okay.
A prompt. Tell me a happy but somewhat unremarkable memory of your childhood.
Oh. Hmm.
And so it can't be, when I say unremarkable, it can't be like, and then we went to Disney World. No.
No, it's, because that's quite notable.
Remarkable, yeah. It's
remarkable.
Yeah, it's, but, you know, it rained the one day, so you made cookies.
Oh, well, let's see. See, the first things that come to mind aren't discrete events. They're more like patterns of activities that I had been engaged in when I was young that bring me a lot of...
We can go with that. It doesn't have to be singular. Can be ritualized. And a ritualized question in a ritualized podcast where we're celebrating... Songs of frustration as a celebration. And I've been trying not to rhyme that every time I've said it so it doesn't sound like bad poetry. With varying degrees of success.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I remember my grandma and granddad, one pair of them lived in Steubenville, Ohio, and, you know, we would go down... pretty regularly when I was young. I had a cousin and an aunt who lived down there too. Just sort of doing things down there always made me really happy. They lived on this sort of the street with no outlet, called Teresa Drive. Mm-hmm. There was this big, big house owned by a family called the Shappas, and they had this poorly maintained miniature golf course like adjacent to their house that they owned. And because they were rich, they had a lot of money.
Yeah,
they had a big estate on that side. They had another estate on the other side, right next to the house that my grandma and granddad had. And we would, you know, go play, you know, mini golf on their course. We'd ride around their driveways at night and throwing tennis balls at each other's bikes. Me and my younger brother and my older cousin, going to the fort. Steuben Mall to see movies, and then to they had an arcade. I feel like it was called Aladdin's Palace or something like that. Things like that bring me a lot of happiness to remember. But there's something, a happy but unremarkable memory. I remember one time my mom's van was really filthy, just like covered in dirt, and my cousin thought it'd be funny to write, like, you know, mildly obscene things all over it. I think he wrote things like, you know, he wrote like, I like smoking and like, I like naked people. Like, just with his finger all over my mom's van. And then, you know, my mom was a little upset about this, and, you know, she got my aunt to yell at my cousin, who, like, was then made to wash it down. But the thing was, after he, like, brought the soap and the water to wash it down, like, you could still read what he had written on the
That's fantastic. That is fantastic. Yeah, all right. Question or prompt or whatever. Four. This was, hey, we're back to actual questions. Have you ever had a dream you wish you could revisit, or a dream world you wish you could periodically revisit from time to time?
Oh, man, I know the answer to this one.
Okay.
I had a dream sometime, probably within the last 6 months, maybe within the last 9 months, maybe within the last year. And I was looking onto the dreamscape, you know, from an outsider's perspective. I was not present in the scene, but the scene was of cosmological scale.
Okay.
I was looking at, you know, nebulas and galaxies and planetary systems.
Oh, wow.
And I could see them swirling beneath me in, you know, sort of a dark and infinite limbo. And at a certain point, everything started sort of folding in on itself, sort of, you know, kind of a
universal contraction, like
the sides would come in and then they'd collapse in.
Oh,
and then,
wow.
And then sides would further turn in on themselves, and there would be sort of these you know, a stratified array of colors that would reveal themselves, you know, more and more, and sort of get compressed more and more down as the universe was collapsing in on itself. And I woke up with an incredible feeling of I don't know, like I texted a friend of mine about what had happened, and then I concluded the text by saying something like, you know, I knew something like, I knew that I would feel like this if I weren't a god. How would I have known that I was going to, like, you know, why would I have said anything else if that were not the case? And I wish I could revisit that feeling, because it was something else.
I'm sure it is. Not everybody gets to witness the end of time.
It was insane.
I'm sure. Wow.
I don't know if, you know, if I have the vocabulary to describe.
I understand now this idea of just brilliance and the immensity of it. And I always thought about that, because, so I'm a narcissist, and so I think that the idea that people get to be alive after I'm dead is total bullshit. Like, that sucks. Like, people are going to be eating tuna melts and shit, and I'm going to be dead.
Yeah, but...
fuck them.
Are you mad about the tuna melts that existed before you were born?
No, but narcissistically, it should, like, we should all... sun should just go supernova, evaporate us. But you think about it, if you were to be at the end of time, and not in any sort of, like, Judeo-Christian or Abrahamic religion, cosmological way, because there's still, like, eternity after it. But if it's just like, no, the sun is just going to erase the human record.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what a compounded horror that is, in a way. Because not only is it your own personal death, the death of people you care about, but all of human history. All of it. The right. Renaissance, World War II, all that shit, gone. That's a compounded horror, I think.
Yeah.
That would be a unique compounded horror. We're just like, wow, it was all and then,
did you ever see that Nick Cave documentary, 20,000 Days on Earth?
Yes, and I actually started counting how many days I've been on Earth.
Oh, how many are you up to?
14,200, and I think about 14,210 or so.
So you're gaining on Nick Cave.
I'm gaining on Nick Cave,
at least in terms of, like, market share of days, you know.
Yes,
if not absolute.
Yes.
But he said something in that movie. About, like, you know, what his greatest fear was or what he worried about the most, what gave him anxiety. And he said losing his memory as he got older.
Yeah.
Because once you lose your memory, you lose all of those experiences.
Yeah.
And then who are you? You know, you've lost that person that you once were. And I think that's a really, I don't know. I think that's a really sort of a neat thought. I don't know. Neat's not the right word.
No, but I understand what you mean in that thing, and the idea of also maybe having a record or recording or the value of the archive, or even, you know, there are two people who I wanted to have on this podcast who passed away.
Oh.
Before I had the opportunity to twist their arm and convince them to do it. And I think about what it would mean to be able to call up their voices on command if I wanted to, or anybody who cared about them so desired. And in the case of the one of them, I'll still find myself, if I'm like doing the dishes or something, I will work out that conversation in my head and the agenda of things I wanted to talk to about that person. It would have been such an amazing thing. And, you know, if not this website or people's individual iPods or NSA Dreamland, the internet is now forever, I guess, or not. You know, maybe I should start, you know, there was the hard times joke. You know, maybe I should start selling lathe cut podcasts. You know, artisan lathe. I only made 10 at episode 38 with Greg Murray, and you hear the song and talk. You know, could I sell those? Is that an Etsy store waiting to happen, or a Discogs? I don't know.
Yeah, throw them up on Discogs, and someone will buy one, and then they'll complain that you're scamming them because it didn't come with the right sticker.
Oh, Lord. All right, question five. We're almost through this.
Oh.
It's almost over.
And we only just began.
Yes. Of the living villains of history, this is the Christopher Hitchens question.
Christopher
Hitchens' mortality, when he found out he was going to die, one of his first thoughts was, man, I won't get to read the obituaries of Henry Kissinger and Joseph Ratzinger. And then he said, wait, I wanted to write those.
Oh.
So for you, of the living villains of history, whose obituary would you like to write?
There are probably a lot of good candidates, but one that comes to mind immediately is Wayne LaPierre.
Yes. Yes.
I think guns are the worst thing in the world. I think that he's a terrible person for being, you know, such a shill for the gun lobby. I think he's got a lot of blood on his hands.
Absolutely.
And, you know, may he be judged by all those victims when he meets his maker.
Yes. And also, you think, I just found out this out about him, but he got a series of medical deferments from Vietnam.
Yeah,
for this guy who's about standing up and fighting, actually, when there was the time to stand up and fight for his generation, he didn't. And how incredibly hypocritical is that? No matter how you feel about that war or whatever, if that's your agenda is, you know, yes, gotta fight, then
he had the opportunity to be like handling a lot of guns.
Yeah,
you know what? Which is it, man? You like guns or don't you?
Yes, that is a great, great, great choice, Wayne LaPierre. And so, on that happy note, I think that's about it. Like I said, there will be. So, actually, do you know offhand? Is it yes? Greg Murray, pgh.bandcamp.com. GregGetsReal@gmail.com. That's another way to like get in touch, right? That's
another way.
If you want to hear it, you want to see it, I will also on the GonnaDiePodcast.com page put a link to the Bandcamp. There's also a tag actually hidden in the comments on section of the MP3. They always put people's websites in there too. I don't know if they find that or whatever, but if you like have a tag editor, you can find it there too. But our next episode will eventually happen, and well, it'll be about something.
Something great.
Something great, or not, or a thing. And I just realized this is 2 months to the day the last episode.
Well, I feel
I'm that regular.
I'm
that committed to this podcast. I think I did three in 2014. So hey. Or 2015, I forget. But anyway, so it'll happen. It'll be about something. Our homepage, where you can find new and old episodes, is GonnaDiePodcast.com. We're also, of course, on iTunes and a bunch of other podcast hosting services somehow that I had nothing to do with, but people can get them on their phones.
Yeah. Nice.
Follow us. And so I didn't have to do anything, so that's the best kind of hosting service there is.
Mm-hmm.
Follow us on Twitter at Gonna Die Podcast, and We're All Gonna Die is on Facebook. Thanks to Brett, as always, for the lovely theme music. Later, meets.